You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, fellow factoid freaks and flapdoodle fans. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 232. And of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your platoon of pleasant people pleased to present plenty of pleasurable podcasting.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
We are coming to you from, well, me and Dana are coming to you from the very glamorous Business Center calling room at the Aria Hotel in Las Vegas.
Ooh. Yeah, we haven't recorded a podcast in the same room in a really long time.
In years.
All it took was BTS.
the power of BTS. Yeah. And as committed as we are to BTS, we're also equally committed to a Good Job Brain. And this is why I brought my computer and our mic and setting this up at the Business Center that, of course, nobody's at.
Right. We're in Las Vegas. What are you doing?
Yeah, we're like above the casino floor in a tiny business suite. So the only reason why Dana's here is we thought she was going to be home. She was going to fly out yesterday, but her flight got canceled. And so now we're here. We also got to see BTS for the second time. Anyways.
The universe provided.
All right. Without further ado, let's jump into our first general trivia segment. Pop quiz, hotshot. So, I didn't bring a Trivial Pursuit card, so I looked one up on Google.
Good.
And so I got a picture of a card here. Colin, once you were in Seattle and we recorded a podcast episode and you were good enough to bring your buzzer. I took inspiration from that and I did not bring my buzzer, but I recorded the sound of the buzzer onto my phone.
Yes.
Dana, you can use my dog buzzer recording from my phone.
Thank you.
And so here we go. Let's try this. Let's answer some questions. First question, Blue Wedge for geography. What country is home to Heineken beer? Oh, of course, Colin.
I believe that's the Netherlands.
It is the Netherlands. All right, second question. How many seconds usually elapsed before the tape self-destructed on Mission Impossible?
Oh.
Yeah.
What's everybody's guess?
Oh, geez.
10.
5.
5 or 6.
It is 5 seconds.
Oh.
Yeah. 5 seconds. Nice. I don't know if they do that in the movies. They don't have the tapes in the movies anymore, right?
Anymore.
Only on the show.
Maybe in the first one? It's been so long since I saw the first one.
How many are there now?
The tapes? None. They all self-destructed. Yeah.
No,
isn't
so
7 about to, or isn't 7 the next one due to come out?
Seriously?
I thought we were into the teens by now, but no.
Okay, so they're at 6 now, but 7 and 8 are scheduled to be released in 2023 and 2024.
7 and 8.
All right, next question. What date in 44 BC was Julius Caesar assassinated? Whoa. I'm going to call on Dana because she used my buzzer
the
recording.
App.
Yeah. Yes, the app.
Was it, I always forget if it's the 13th or the 17th. The 17th?
Incorrect. Chris, I believe
it's. Is it generally considered to be the 15th?
Yeah.
15th.
The middle of the month.
Okay. Yeah.
But the real Ides is the new moon.
Right.
All right. Next question. What heroic group did D'Artagnan lead?
Ah.
Colin.
The Three Musketeers.
Yes. Yeah. Three Musketeers. Green Wedge for Science and Nature. What's the term for opposition to an electrical current in a conductor? Chris.
Resistance.
Correct. Resistance. Mm. Last question, Orange Wedge. What's the main vegetable in Vichyssoise?
Oh, geez.
Chris.
Potato?
Incorrect.
Okay. Ooh. I was going to say potato.
You say potato, I say
potato. Potato is in it. Describe what Vichyssoise is, or what you think it is.
Nobody said I would have to describe what Vichyssoise is.
I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah. No, I just thought it was a primarily potato-based soup.
It is leeks.
There are more links to potato in it?
Okay.
Is that, maybe is potato that by is flavor not considered a vegetable in this? I don't know.
Maybe it's a tuber. Leaks. All right. Thank you, Trivial Pursuit card that I found on the internet.
Nice.
I was in a jam.
So a couple episodes ago, I think in our Seeing Red episode, I talked about cherries. And something I omitted from that segment that I found was super interesting, that there is a not so glamorous job of cherry blowing. Cherry blowing. Okay. Well, because I talked about cherries.
Go on. All right.
So first of all, when people are growing cherries, one of the most kind of precarious moments is when they're about to ripe and it rains. And that causes a huge problem for the cherry growers, because the rain will kind of settle on the fruit, especially on the little divot, you know, when the stems come out.
Mm.
Cherries are super high in sugar content.
Yeah.
So they will split if there is extra moisture, or they will rot with extra moisture. So the cherry growers found a solution, and this is they hire cherry blowers. And this has been in existence for decades now. They hire pilots to fly planes above cherry farms, cherry orchards, will blow the water off the fruit.
I think I've seen this on TV before.
It's amazing. And it's like, I was researching about, like, how do you become a cherry blower? Usually they're pilots, right? Pilots have different jobs. They do different gigs, and you have to be on call. Mm-hmm. You have to be close to the cherry farm. But then what if it doesn't rain and you're not guaranteed a paycheck then? So what they do is cherry growers, they have like a retaining period. They're like, we need you to be available in the next 3 weeks, and we're going to pay you a per diem.
Okay.
So even if you're not necessarily working and or blowing cherries, we're going to compensate you just to be available. If rain doesn't happen, at least they get paid for trying. Huh. And if rain does happen, then they would come and blow all the cherries.
Yeah.
When you first said it, I was not picturing, you know, like a helicopter. I was thinking, you know, like a guy with like a little straw or that's something it. Like. Yeah, yeah.
I like, was like, they do that by mouth.
Yeah. Wow. It must take forever.
It's each individual cherry. Yeah.
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 It's like a big boba straw.
Yeah. Right.
Well, but like cherry growers throughout the ages have done everything to try to solve this problem. Shaking the tree. Big fans. But it just had to be that balance of what's strong enough and what's not destructive.
Right.
When we're dealing with wind. So yeah, cherry blowing's fascinating job. One of the topics that Colin always wanted to do is around dirty jobs, about like unglamorous jobs. Yeah. But that story and that topic kind of inspired me to just have an episode on things that are dirty. Could be dirty job. It could be different takes on the word.
Yeah.
So this week, brush that dirt off your shoulder.
So guys, human existence is in many ways.
Yeah, wow. Deep.
A never-ending struggle against dirt. In America and in the world, I guess, actually, we found a way to turn that struggle into consumer products, never-ending supply of clean products, goods to clean everything from your house to your body and everything in between. I have a grab bag quiz for you all here about cleaning products, famous ones. And we're going to, you know, maybe a little tricky here with some of these. Let's do this as a write-down quiz.
Oh, ooh. I got these nice hotel pens. That
wonderful,
I can use.
Wonderful.
Oh, wow.
I'm using my BTS pen.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, I don't want to privilege those of us with buzzers.
Oh, thank you.
So get your writing implements ready. This is going to be a quiz about brands, logos, slogans, history, you name it, a little bit of everything here. The one common uniting theme is cleaning products. Okay, here we go. Okay. First one. According to its manufacturer, Among the ingredients in this cleaning product is Liquitint Sky Blue, a trademarked dye. The name, of course, trademarked. All right, when you're ready, answers up. Okay, I believe everyone has written the correct answer here. Windex, yeah! That's right. Yeah, nice. Really just iconic color here. They were the ones, I learned, that really pioneered blue equals glass cleaner. It was just, and yeah, everybody else on the market just kind of followed suit.
Mm.
Did I ever mention on the show, so I went to Iceland, I ate the fermented shark.
Oh, right, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, the hakarl.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to me, it tastes like eating a cube of concentrated Windex.
Yeah, yeah. That's, well, I mean, you know, famously, if you're not familiar with Windex, you're right. I mean, it, you know, it goes back to the 1930s. And yeah, famously, a high ammonia percentage in the product. That was really kind of its active ingredient was, yeah, I mean, as much as 5% ammonia at times. So yeah, totally, totally understand why the fermented shark, which is high in ammonia, also gives you
it's
that.
It's high in pea acid.
yeah. That whiff of Windex. Okay, let's talk about Mr. Clean. Mr. Clean, the well-known, hardworking, bald-headed mascot introduced by Procter & Gamble in 1958 for what has become a true family of cleaning products. But we'll stick with color here. What color are Mr. Clean's eyebrows?
Ha!
What color are Mr. Clean's eyebrows? Doesn't have any hair on top of his head, but he's got two good eyebrows there.
Huh.
Okay.
Mr. Clean, in Spain, known as Don Limpio.
What does that mean?
In France, he is Monsieur Propre. Answers up when you're ready. You're all trying to just imagine him here. All right. Karen and Dana have said white. Chris has said blonde. Chris, I'm sorry. The correct answer is white.
Really?
Mr. Clean's eyes. Okay. His eyebrows are white.
White.
He looks like a an adult, like a grown-up Oompa Loompa.
Yeah. Yeah. I never really thought about it that way. Hair. Right. Yeah. Right. In 1978, Bristol-Myers introduced Body on Tap shampoo, which was one third what? Body on Tap shampoo. And I have a fun commercial I will play for you here in a moment.
Oh, thank you.
All right. One third.
It's got to be this.
You have all thankfully put the right answer. It is indeed beer. Body on Tap shampoo. One third beer. It sounds so ridiculous, but it apparently is quite popular. They even reintroduced this a few years ago. There was a commercial for Body on Tap shampoo I found with a young Kim Basinger, which we can play here in just 1 second. Apparently, they used beer they got from Budweiser Corporation. They would.
It's a collab.
Well, yes and no. It sounds like the Bud was. They were happy to take Bristol Myers money, but they did not want to be involved in any of the marketing. And they were like, "No, you can't. Right, yeah, right. You can't say proudly featuring." Yeah, and they had to, you know, denature the beer, so it was no longer.
I was going to ask if you needed an ID to get.
Let me share this ad with you guys here. They have some helpful advice for you as a consumer.
Clean. I mean, really clean. And it holds any set I want.
New beer-enriched shampoo, Body on Tap, gives your hair super body, super hold.
Brewed with one-third real beer.
Wow.
But don't drink it. Just shampoo. Whether I roll it, pin it, curl it, or blow it dry, it gives my hair super body, super hold.
And the shine of your life. It's the beer shampoo that does it in three bodybuilding formulas.
That's body.
On tap.
I don't get it. I'm listening to the ad. I'm just like, you're not even making the case for why the beer is.
Yeah, why?
Be there.
What
it's
does
just
it
like,
do?
It's shampoo and it has beer in it. Wow. Amazing. Yes.
And she's all like, right? Don't drink it. Which I'm sure the lawyers were like, now, all right, you got to make sure that she says don't drink it in there. Yeah.
She's like, see, it works. You can still blow dry your hair.
It works. Yeah. It didn't fall out, and I smell like a brewery. It's, oh, well.
I love smelling like yeast. Yeah.
It sold for a number of years, and then I read a few years ago they brought it back. There was enough of a fan base or nostalgia, I guess, or maybe just curiosity. Okay, question four. From 1970 to 1990, actor Nancy Walker portrayed Rosie, a no-nonsense New Jersey diner waitress pitching a product.
Oh.
With a very famous catchphrase, one of the best known in American consumer history. For 1 point each.
Oh.
Two points here. I want you to tell me, what is the product and what is the catchphrase / slogan? Once again, Nancy Walker in her famous portrayal on TV anyway of Rosie, a diner waitress. Numerous commercials over 20 years. Household name, product. What is the product? What is the catchphrase? Chris nodding serenely.
I mean, I have an answer that I think is really great.
I'm kind of just guessing what would a diner waitress... It must be like...
Yeah, what kind of scenarios would a diner waitress
spills,
run into?
Like laundry related, cleaning the counter.
Karen, you just got to trust your instincts. Product, so yeah, I think trust your instincts here, Karen. Yeah.
But like I have to think of a tagline. So it has to be a product that has a tagline. Oh, I know. Oh my gosh. See, this is what like a little bit of time gives you.
All right. Okay. Karen and Chris have written Bounty paper towels, the Quicker Picker Upper. Dana has written Palmolive and
like Tough on Grease.
On Grease, easy on hands or something. That's a good one. That's a good one. Chris and Karen have it correct. It is Bounty. Bounty paper towels. Wow.
Yes!
Karen reaching deep for that
one. Last minute. Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, Nancy Walker, a long career on TV. She was on many, many TV shows. She was on Mary Tyler Moore Show. One of her last roles was on Golden Girls toward the end of her life. So she was the best thing in Hollywood. You're a working actor and you have like a long running commercial gig on the side. It's really pretty good. All right. Moving right along. Question five. In addition to numerous artworks featuring Campbell's soup cans, Andy Warhol famously produced a series of works featuring what household cleaning product?
Oh.
There are many of these. He made quite a number of these. If you happen to have one, it is a very valuable thing.
Okay. Well, sure.
It's not a banana.
Let me just check. Do I have one?
Yeah, it's worth looking.
No, I don't think I do.
It's not a banana.
Not Marilyn Monroe.
Not Marilyn Monroe. This is a kitchen, usually, cleaning item.
Huh.
All right. You're going to need answers up here. Just take your best guess here.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know.
Okay. Chris has written Comet. Dana's written Clorox bleach. Karen's written sponge. I'm sorry. I was looking for Brillo. Brillo scrubbing towels.
Oh, come on.
I needed the brand name. That is the whole point of the art and they are. Yeah. So he won it, you know, very famously. Their reproduction, like Brillo crate boxes. And he would.
Sure.
No partial point.
I'm sorry, I cannot give you a partial point there. Yeah, a Brillo pad is not a sponge. A Brillo pad is like the you know, it's like steel wool,
it's
basically with soap in there. Yeah,
top part of a sponge.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know, you guys rising to the challenge here. I didn't promise you easy ones, but here we go. Question six. Introduced in 1891, this cleaning product is named not after its founder, but after the animals that transported it.
Oh, we talked about this. Oh, no, wait.
We may have talked about this on the show before. Yeah, how well does that memory serve you? 1891, very, very popular product in America, perhaps less so now than it used to be. Answers when you're ready. Dana improvising.
Oh, you guys.
Okay, now I'm gonna be generous here. I'm gonna give you a chance to clarify. I am looking for the name of this product named after the animals that transported it. Chris and Karen have written Borax, which is the generic good being sold. But what is the name? What is the brand name? I should say Borax, of course, not named after animals. This was transported out of Death Valley, California. Had to get it all the way to the railroads. Ah, Karen has written simply burrow, which is you're getting on the right track. Chris has written 11 mule team. And Chris, I will give you 11 twentieths of a point because it is in fact 20 mule team. 20 mule team.
I don't know how many mules.
Yeah. So we'll see if that 11 twentieths of a point comes into play here at the end. Yeah, it really did. It really did take a team of 20 mules to haul the raw borax. Francis Smith, the borax king of California.
Yeah, where he had hauled it all the way out of Death Valley to get it into American homes so they could make slime.
Question 7. The logo for this brand that sells a variety of cleaning products is a reference to the Roman god Vulcan. And now I'll give you a little bit of a hint here. Now, Vulcan, you might, of course, be thinking Vulcan is the god of fire. Now, that's true. Vulcan also the god of fire, including metalworking.
Yeah, and blacksmithing.
The forge.
Oh! Okay.
Got it. I got this one.
Yeah.
I do not got this one. Let me see.
I believe in you, Chris.
I know.
You have all written the correct answer. Arm and Hammer. That's right. Arm and Hammer, the baking soda empire. It was started by Austin Church and John Dwight. They were brothers-in-law. And after Austin Church retired, they carried over the name from one of his son's businesses, which was Vulcan Spice Mills. And Vulcan Spice had the arm and the hammer. Vulcan often shown with kind of the blacksmith hammer. Yeah, so they incorporated it into their sort of, you know, taking over their father's business. And yeah.
I thought Army Hammer was part of the Armand
Hammer family.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a funny story about that. So Army Hammer is related to the very wealthy deceased industrialist Armand Hammer. Armand Hammer owned many, many, many businesses over the years. And a lot of people, in fact, assumed that he had a connection to the Armand Hammer baking soda company. He did not, but he ended up buying the company because he thought it was essentially, you know, kind of just tickled him on some level. But no, his name has no connection to the baking soda company.
They didn't name it for him.
Yeah, it did not.
But he did buy it because it's funny.
Because it's funny.
Really just as kind of a rich guy goof. Yeah that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, we're getting toward the end of the quiz here, getting a little tricky. If you believed the ads in the 1970s, ring around the collar was a ever-present threat to exasperated housewives and laundry doers. What detergent was behind the Ring Around the Collar campaign? Ring Around the Collar.
Yeah, that was such a problem they really presented. Even up to the 90s, I remember, it's like, wow, this is, what a problem. It's like, is it?
Yeah.
Can people just take showers more?
I know, I'm going back and forth, but I feel like that's it.
You have all written down Tied. Unfortunately, it is not Tied. It is Whisk.
Is that even around anymore?
So, you know, it's funny, Whisk is not, maybe it's not funny, but no, they are not around anymore. They were discontinued about 5 or 6 years ago,
and now nobody cares about Ring Around the Collar
right, they went away. But you guys here, last question, we got a chance to make up some points here. This, I think, is still everybody's game on the table, including Chris's 11 twentieths of a point.
Okay.
Last question. So we have now discussed Tide and Whisk. It is, of course, maybe not a coincidence that so many laundry detergents are single syllable names. I want you to write down as many single syllable name laundry detergents as you can. Ooh. And I will give you 1 point for each. All right. Get ready. Go. I've tried to assemble what I think is a fairly comprehensive list.
Okay.
We can go to the internet if needed to settle any disputes.
This is American, I assume.
Yeah, American. But hey, you know what? If you, you know, well, maybe you can convince me. But yeah, we're thinking American, English speaking, perhaps at least one syllable. If you can think of a multiple word with one syllable, that'd be very impressive.
Ah.
All right, time is up. I gotta call it. Chef, at least two. All right, who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay, Chris. Okay. All right.
Tide.
Yep.
Whisk.
Yep.
Yeah.
All.
Yes.
Gain.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Cheer.
Yeah.
Oh.
And Dreft, the baby shampoo.
I will give you baby Dreft. Detergent. Yes. Yeah. Dreft, the...
Not baby shampoo. Yeah,
the detergent. The line detergent. Of products. That's right. The first synthetic detergent I read, Dreft.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay, so Chris coming in with six there. Dana,
Karen, are you writing? I see pen on paper.
I'm crossing it out because they're fake names. Yeah.
So I had four. I had four of Chris's, and I also had Bounce.
Ooh,
it is laundry product.
Yeah, but it's a fabric softener. I'm not.
Wait, but that's I'm what not you sure put I can in the laundry you,
I'm not sure
machine.
I can give you Bounce. I'm not sure I can give you Bounce.
But you put it in the washer.
She's mad now.
Four for Dana?
No, and then I also put Bright. I made it up, but maybe it's something.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I was crossing. I was like, I don't think these are right.
I'll give you a point and then a bubble just for the spirit. Okay.
It better have a little like light reflection.
Yeah, mm-hmm, it does. Yeah, okay. That's right. Little window. Right. Karen, what do you got?
Tide Whisk, All, Gain. I also put in clear, clean, fresh, and bare.
Okay, just into the making stuff up around here. All right. Well, ended up being very close here. By my tally, we've got Chris Kohler with 10 points, Dana with 7 bubble points, Karen with 9. So, Chris, coming in at the end, being able to name those single syllables. Here's the list I was able to assemble of generally available or recently or until recently available in the English-speaking world. We have all. We got biz. We got bold. Bold, I guess, primarily the UK, but you can get it here. We got cheer. We've got cheer. Dreft, as Chris noted. We got fab. We got gain. We've got sun. We've got surf. Another one that is UK based, also available here. Tide, of course. Whisk, of course. Rest in peace. And win. Which is one of the newer ones on the market.
I feel pretty good about this. I feel pretty good about
what because about the ones bear that
I
didn't one?
Get, I basically haven't heard of.
Oh,
there's a teddy bear one. Snuggle.
Oh, snuggle. That's two syllables.
All right. Well, we went deep on cleaning. You guys did pretty good. Pretty good. Keep it clean.
It's so Colin to give you 11.
I like that.
20.
That
was
a good one. No, it's a good joke. It's a good joke.
He won't give you partial points, but he'll give you when it's mathematically accurate.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Calling all kids in the car. Brittany and Meredith here from the chart-topping Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast. Are you dreading another silent car ride with the fam? We've got the cure. 3 rounds of fresh trivia every single week. Movies, music, even science and Disney. We've got something for every trivia buff in the car. No more crickets chirping on those long journeys. Hooray! The Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast is your secret weapon for connecting and laughing with kids of all ages. Teens, toddlers, adults, it doesn't matter. Spark their curiosity and challenge their brains with every episode. New episodes drop weekly wherever you get your podcasts. Search for the Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast and turn those car rides into epic adventures.
Hi, my name's Avalon. Did you know that pandas poop 100 times a day. You're listening to Good Job Brain. Bye.
And we're back. This week, we're talking about things that are dirty.
All right. Well, you're all listening to Good Job Brain, and that means that you want to know things. You have a curiosity about the world around you or the universe possibly around you. And a lot of times, we always hear people say, oh, you know, I knew that because of Good Job Brain. And okay, well, here's something. Here's a Good Job Brain heads up for you all. You listen to Good Job Brain, and now you know this, okay? So you now you know. Aliens may crash land on Earth in the year 2033.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying that they definitely will. I'm not saying it's even likely, but it is possible. I'm just sharing this because I found this out. Now I have to live with the burden of this knowledge for the next decade plus, and I have to pass it on to all of you. Again, I became burdened with this heavy knowledge that aliens may crash land on Earth in the year 2033. Because of this show, I went to Google because I was like, oh, we're doing something on dirty dirt soil. What's the rarest, most expensive dirt think of? What's the most, you know, thinking that like there'd be some soil somewhere that's so rich and perfect that people will pay a lot of money for it. Well, all of the Google results for most expensive dirt that I saw initially were totally destroyed by people talking about the idea of Mars dirt from Mars being potentially not only the most expensive dirt in the world, but the most expensive thing in the world as far as the amount of money you would have to spend to get it. Huh. That if we ever were to obtain a soil sample from Mars, it will be by far the most expensive dirt. A handful of Mars dirt, it would cost $9 billion.
Just
to get it. So yeah, let's talk about Mars dirt. The idea of getting dirt from Mars has been something that scientists have been very interested in for a long time. We learned a lot about the moon when they went and got moon dirt and brought that back. And so now we have very sophisticated equipment. So even the samples that they brought back because they went to the moon in the 60s, like we can now analyze that to a better degree than they could in the 60s and learn even more about the moon. And so now we can learn a lot about Mars by getting a Mars sample as well. Like, was there ever life on Mars? You know, like if so, how long ago was it? Was there ever water on Mars? If so, how long ago was it? Is there still water somewhere potentially? Like, by analyzing the soil sample, we could really answer a great deal of questions that we don't have the answer to right now. So basically, like, getting the Mars dirt isn't like, oh, we got some Mars dirt, let's put it in a museum and look at it. Like, it's a big deal in terms of knowledge. So everybody agrees we want it. The problem is getting it. In 2012, we got like the next best thing to actually having Mars dirt, which is the Curiosity rover that landed on Mars. Yeah. That was outfitted with a variety of features that could, it has a laser that it can use to like vaporize a sample of rock.
Whoa!
And then pick it up, pull it inside itself, and then run remote scientific analysis on it, including like X-ray, like spectral analysis. So
cool.
The Curiosity remotely analyzed in 2012 the components of Mars soil. And so now you can actually buy, because they've made this, simulated Mars dirt, which is the same grouping of minerals that the Curiosity found. But that's very useful, but it's not the real thing, right?
Right.
So
the Mars lawyers won't let you sell it as Mars dirt. You have to sell it as Mars style dirt.
Yeah. Right, dirt made famous by Mars. Yeah.
It has to be spelled with a Y instead of
dirt.
A poor substitute for the real thing. Here's the interesting thing. I didn't even know this. We are now 2 years into a joint mission between NASA and the ESA, the European Space Agency, to bring back Mars soil. We have the Perseverance rover, right? That was launched in on July 30th, 2020. Mm-hmm. It landed on Mars in February 21 successfully. And currently, in addition to all the other stuff that it's doing over there, it is collecting up samples and it's storing them. And it's collecting like, you know, it's coring rock and collecting samples of that. It's collecting dirt samples. Yeah. It's collecting like atmosphere, like it's called like witness samples, like what's in the atmosphere right now.
Oh,
so it's just like grabbing some air so it can study the particles that are in there, and it's storing them up, and it's doing it. It's collecting samples in what scientists believe is a dried up lake bed where there used to be water. I mean, maybe like billions of years ago, but like they figure that the dried up lake bed has like the highest potential of finding not only water or like, you know, some evidence of where water might be, but also evidence of life. Even if that life died out billions of years ago, the dried up lake bed might have the evidence. So there's actually going to be now three more missions over the next decade plus to get the samples back. I'm going to skip over a lot of details. But basically in 2028, by 2028, there will be multiple vehicles in or around Mars ready for the essentially the return mission.
The handoff.
So there's going to be another rover that they're going to send that's going to go retrieve the samples off of Perseverance, because it's possible Perseverance may have shut down by then.
They need another rover
to go get the stuff. As a backup, Perseverance, if it's still working, could deliver the samples by itself. But the whole thing is here, they're not taking any chances whatsoever. So then another vehicle that's going to get sent there with the Fetch rover is the MAV, or Mars Ascent Vehicle, which is going to be the vehicle that they're going to be able to remotely control to actually blast itself off and achieve orbit.
Awesome.
From the surface of Mars. Yeah. No. Nope. Because all it can do, all this thing can do, it's going to be able, fingers crossed, and also it can't just take off. It's gonna like bounce itself into the air first and then take off.
Uh-huh.
Make sure that it clears the ground before the actual launch, so that it doesn't. Yeah, because if this thing fizzles and falls over, like that's it, you know?
Right, right.
And so then it's gonna get into orbit, and the Mars Ascent Vehicle is now just gonna be orbiting around Mars, and then it's gonna release the sample container into orbit. And so now the samples are just going to be floating around Mars, and they're going to have up there the Earth Return Orbiter.
Oh my God.
Which there is, I saw this computer simulation of what it's going to be. And like the Earth Return Orbiter is kind of like orbiting Mars this way, and the sample is coming from the other side, and the Earth Return Orbiter just opens up a little hole, and the sample just goes floats into the hole. And it's like, of course. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure it will.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to involve like these like three vehicles. It's going to eject the sample in space. It's the other one's going to pick it up. And then the Earth Return Orbiter is going to, then it's going to blast itself a little bit to change its orbit, put itself into a path where it's going to kind of then be in an orbit that's going to carry it back to Earth. And then in the year 2033, once all this is done, it's going to crash land 80 miles south of Salt Lake City.
Wow.
In the Utah Desert.
Wow.
And like, that's the plan.
How, like, I'm picturing like a football size amount of like dirt. Like, how much dirt is it bringing back? Like,
it is bringing back maybe 20 little vials. Like, if you imagine just like a vial.
Air and dirt. Okay. And,
okay. Yep. And it's going to, they're all going to be in a very like protective, you know, covering, because they actually, they don't want to have a parachute failure be the end of this whole thing. So it's going to be in a container that can simply crash land. Like, it's going to protect all the, imagine having to protect these tiny vials in something that's literally like a meteor falling under. You know what I mean?
It's like that physics experiment with the egg.
Yep. Yep,
but
that,
this is like NASA
level $9
billion egg thing.
Yeah. The scale is so big. For me, it wasn't an egg. For the one I did was a taco shell.
Oh.
I did one with a light bulb. We had to see how far we could drop a light bulb.
And it's like they could try to do this faster, but they're just giving themselves a nice big padded window to make sure this is perfect. So this brings us back to the aliens crash landing on Earth, because it's like, we've done analysis of what's in there remotely on the Curiosity rover, but it's like, might there be microscopic life forms in there? Like, we don't know. Like, we don't know. It's very unlikely at this point.
Yeah.
Which means, you know, people are not like super concerned about this, but like, when this thing comes in, they are treating it like a potential huge biohazard.
Mm. Oh, yeah, makes sense.
Until they can be sure that it's not. And in fact, even just to make sure that the outside of the containers, like the outside of the vials, don't bring anything from Mars. They want to make sure the insides are Mars and the outsides are not. They're super clean, right? This is why, I mean, learning about this, it's like, oh, right. When they send the Curiosity rover or whatever to Mars, it's like, you've heard of like clean rooms? It's like clean rooms within clean rooms, because they are just literally just like cleaning this thing and cleaning it and cleaning it and cleaning it, making sure everything is totally spotless. Because if you take this thing and it's got all Earth bacteria all over it and you send it to Mars and the bacteria are on Mars,
we're the alien.
Well, now we're the alien. Exactly. Yeah. Precisely. And then you come back and it's like, oh, there is life on Mars. It's like, no, there's not. We just sent it there. It's like, there is now. So, yes, I'm exaggerating here the threat to human existence. It's exceedingly unlikely that life is going to hitch a ride, but they have to be absolutely sure.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so if everything goes well, I mean, if all of these things actually work and everything is fine, we could have a handful of, not even a handful, like several vials of Mars dirt for the low cost. Well, you know, I'll say this. This is not my observation. I saw somebody make this observation in a YouTube comment, but it's like, the dirt is $0, but the shipping and handling.
That's how they get you.
That's how they get you in 11 short years from now.
All right, I have a quiz for you all. It's called Dirty Movies, and I want you to note that dirty is in quotes. You maybe forget my voice. Okay. Because all the movie titles include the word dirty.
Parents, don't freak out.
Yeah, this is a family show. So dirty is in quotes. And I'm going to give you the year, and I'm going to read you the IMDb plot synopsis.
All right.
And you buzz in and tell me the name of the dirty movie.
Okay.
All right, first movie. This is 1987. Spending the summer at a Catskills resort with her family, Frances Baby Houseman falls in love with the camp's dance instructor, Johnny Castle. Everybody.
Dirty Dancing.
Starring Patrick Swayze and Jennifer Grey.
Yeah, and hey, let's not downsell our man Jerry Orbach here either.
Yes, yes.
Come on, yeah.
Next movie, 1971. When a madman calling himself the Scorpio Killer menaces the city, tough as nails San Francisco police inspector Harry Callahan is assigned to track down and ferret out the crazed psychopath. I heard a horse first. Colin?
That is Dirty Harry.
Dirty Harry, starring
Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, that's right. 2016 movie. Right before his wedding, an uptight guy is tricked into driving his grandfather, a lecherous former Army Lieutenant Colonel, to Florida for spring break.
Oh.
Colin.
Is this Dirty Grandpa? Is that
dirty
what it is?
Dirty Grandpa.
Oh, yes. I didn't see this one. I didn't. This
Zac,
was
Zac Efron.
Right?
Who's the grandpa? Do you
Robert,
was it
Robert
De Niro?
It is.
Was it De Niro?
Bobby D. Okay. 1988, two con men try to settle their rivalry by betting on who can swindle a young American heiress out of $50,000 first. Karen.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, starring Michael Caine.
Yes.
Yeah, like two-thirds of every movie released in the 80s.
Michael Caine.
Can you think of, do you know who the other person is?
Steve Martin.
This is a 1967 dirty movie. During World War II, a rebellious U.S. Army major is assigned a dozen convicted murderers to train and lead them into a mass assassination mission of German officers. Karen.
The Dirty Dozen?
Yes.
Yeah!
Yes. Do you know any of the people in that?
Nope.
It's Lee Marvin and Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All right. 2004. High school senior Katie moves to Havana in November 1958 when her dad gets a promotion at Ford. She meets a local waiter who introduces her to sensual Cuban music and dance. They enter a big dance contest for the prize when he gets fired. I heard a rooster, Chris.
Dirty Dancing 2, Havana Nights.
Yo, darn it!
Okay.
How do you know?
Man.
I knew there was a Dirty Dancing 2, and then you said Cuba. I'm like, okay, I've heard this before. All right.
It is actually not called Dirty Dancing 2. Karen.
Is it Dirty Dancing Havana Nights?
That's right. Dirty Dancing. No,
they want you to feel like you can watch them in either order, you know.
I mean, 58, it might be a prequel not really a prequel, but you know. Do you know any of the people in this movie?
Can't say that I do, but absolutely, if you say the name, maybe I'll ring them.
Okay. Diego Luna.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
he was in,
really?
Yes. Y tu mama también, yeah.
Y tu mama también, yeah.
Wow.
All right. This is a 2002 movie. Irregular migrants Akwe and Sine work at a posh London hotel and live in constant fear of deportation. One night, Akwe stumbles across evidence of a bizarre murder, setting off a series of events that could lead to disaster or freedom, starring two big actors.
I'm just going to make a guess.
Mm-hmm.
Dirty Money.
Oh.
No, that is a movie, but that's not this movie.
Mm.
Chris.
Dirty Work.
No, that is also a movie, but not this one. It's tricky. This is the hardest one in this quiz. Dirty Pretty Things with Chiwetel Ejiofor and Audrey Tautou.
Yeah, I never saw that one. Definitely heard of it.
Okay, this is the last one. This is a dirty TV show. Okay. Mm. 2018 TV series. It's an anthology series in which each season is based on a true crime story featuring an epic tale of love gone wrong.
Karen.
Dirty Money.
No.
What?
Okay, Karen.
I have to press the play button.
Yes.
Dirty John.
Yes, Dirty John.
Yeah.
It's starring Connie Britton and Christian Slater.
Oh.
And there's a new one. There's one with Amanda Peet.
Good job, you guys. That was a dirty movies.
They had a remake of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, didn't they?
Yeah,
with, did like a gender flip version, right?
I wonder if they wanted more than $50,000 in the remake.
So I have our last segment, but this is not part of my segment. This is another weird dirty job that I found. This is egg addling. Egg addling. Have you guys heard about this before?
You're just making these up. Ken.
No, I know. It sounds like
I'm cherry blowing. Eggs.
Shaking eggs.
It's where you stuff the eggs in your pants to keep them warm. And it's, you know, the
plain over the eggs.
You're not that far off. What an egg addler does is helps limit goose population.
Huh.
You know, when I say control the population, they're pretty much making sure that the egg doesn't hatch, or they don't want the egg to hatch into more wild geese. So definitely more humane than just straight up killing geese. So egg addling, someone will come, wade in the water, and they dip the eggs in oil. The oil will stop oxygen from passing through the shell. So the egg will never...
Being
a gosling, because there's never going to be oxygen in the beginning for it to happen.
It just stops.
It's not that it's too slippery for her to sit on it anymore.
Immediately flies off the eggs.
They just use corn oil, and they dip the eggs in corn oil, and it'll stop it from.
They leave it in the nest so the mama goose doesn't freak out like, "Where's my egg?" Right?
Or reject other eggs.
It's probably not a clean job. Yeah.
No, definitely not. No. I mean, a lot of poop. Geese poop so much.
Ugh, yeah, they do.
Geese poop a lot. Yeah, a lot.
And it can be so aggressive, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't make eye contact with them because they're going to either...
Because they see through your soul.
No, because they, look at you, and if they think you're, threatening them, they hiss, and they get big, and then they chase you. You're like...
Yeah, I didn't ask for this.
So my segment... It's interesting that both of us kind of went into space for our segment. And I'm going to talk about moon dust.
Oh.
Getting dirty on the moon.
Sounds like something from the 70s.
Kind of. Yeah. Moon dust. Or, you know, I guess the formal name is lunar soil. So what does it feel like? Mm. What do you think moon dust feels like? Talc?
We took our daughter, who's four, to the Chabot, like, you know, Space and Science Museum, and they had a little bin of what they described as simulated moon dirt. And I was very curious, and you know, it felt almost like magic sand, kind of like almost like not like Play-Doh, but it had like a really viscous quality to it. Like you could kind of like sculpt it and mold it. It was really not at all what I expected. If it's anywhere close to what actual moon dust is like, it was not what I expected.
So Chris mentioned that on Earth, we have lunar soil. Mm-hmm. We have that. It's somewhere in NASA. We actually have a lot of it. So it's not like in little vials. There's a lot of lunar dirt that people have brought back. It has some super, super strange qualities. You know, what is lunar dirt? It's formed when meteoroids crash on the moon's surface, heating, pulverizing rocks. There is no water on moon. And so it's very dry, but there's also no wind or water movement. There's no movement to tumble the moon dust. So it's almost like as if they've never been disturbed. So the particle, the most signature characteristic of moon dust, the edges are really, really jagged on a very small scale. And annoyingly, they cling to everything. Because it's so, it's almost like a mini burr or a mini like Velcro because it's so rough. Astronauts described it as invasive. It is so annoying and it's so clingy.
It's the glitter of the sky.
It is the glitter of space. Yeah. It clings to spacesuits. It can eat away layers of moon boots as they're walking on the moon. Imagine when it comes into contact with humans. Or into humans. So famously, Jack Schmidt, who is an Apollo 17 astronaut, he actually had a reaction. He took, you know, he on the space shuttle, he took off his helmet after, you know, a stroll on the moon, and he started having like allergies. His throat was like kind of congested. Yeah. His eyes were itchy.
Oh no.
I guess people didn't really think about
that. Because they're like, they're no creatures.
Yeah. So we must be safe. Yeah. So astronauts also have smelled and tasted moon dust. Oh.
the human impulse to taste something new.
I know.
Guys, don't put this in your mouth.
And well, what does it taste like? What does it smell like? Is it just putting sand in your mouth? And you're like,
but pointier.
Yeah, pointed right, to get cut up right. Your tongue. It smells like and it tastes like gunpowder.
Huh.
Why did you put that in your mouth?
Moon dust and gunpowder, they don't share any similar chemical makeup or properties. So it has been a long mystery for NASA as to why when astronauts in their space shuttle smell moon dust, they smell gunpowder. It's as if someone fired a gun.
Huh.
And on Earth, it doesn't smell like anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It only
smells like that in space or within the space shuttle when they're kind of freshly stepped off the moon. But like when they bring it back, it doesn't smell like anything.
Mm.
Yeah, so they have a couple of theories. It could be oxidation. The smell dissipates.
They weren't vacuum sealing the dust to come back. Like they just opened it in the space shuttle. Like it gets everywhere, glitter. And then they like eat it. You're like, what are you guys doing?
So obviously they did put in the effort of transporting the dust back. I said earlier, this stuff is so abrasive, they broke the vacuum seal. Because this stuff is so rough that it's not a true vacuum.
That's crazy.
For every mission that they brought back, there's always a problem with like really containing the moon dust. So it could be because of that like the moisture of our planet and also oxidation kind of just like neutralized or got rid of the odor. Some theorize it might be solar winds.
Too many weird mysteries around this stuff.
I want to see what other things smell different, you know, in space versus on Earth.
So currently no one knows. We literally don't know why it smells like gunpowder.
Wow.
I picture that, you know, just a dude with a shovel, you know, in like the early moon missions. Maybe, I don't know, maybe technology is helping us here.
I think they figured it out by now, yeah.
So yes, a NASA mystery. Also, smelling moon dust is very dangerous because it will rip your insides. Yeah, yeah. Right. Don't do it.
So don't do it.
Don't play with it. Don't touch it. Don't eat it.
The simulated moon dust at the Children's Science Museum.
Yeah, yeah. Probably safe.
But I would just stop there. Yeah.
But you definitely... Look, I would feel safer eating real moon dust than the moon dust from the Children's Science Center bin.
Oh, yeah.
Ew.
Wow, moon dust smells a lot like boogers.
Urine. Children's... It's very sticky.
Yeah, and so you're like, it's viscous. And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
If,
oh, that's grape soda, Colin. Yeah. That's
purple. Yeah.
So, listeners, last week I presented you a challenge, a Wordle challenge. I'm trying to, my attempt to make a Wordle-based puzzle, but in audio format. And I have the same challenge for you for a different word this week. What this is pretend that there is a person who's playing Wordle and all you see is their screen and you see that they've attempted to guess at the Wordle secret word five times and you have their list of words. And so can you use this information and work backwards to figure out what the correct answer is? Now, this person is a pretty casual Wordle player, meaning they're not going to bank or bench letters. They will never repeat wrong letters. If they get a letter right, they will always use it in their next guess. If they get the letter right and in the right place, they will always keep that letter there. So I think a lot of you guys had fun last week solving this puzzle. I have another one for you. I'm gonna give you five words in order. Here we go. Word number one, night, N-I-G-H-T. Second word is 40. F-O-R-T-Y. The third word is stump. S-T-U-M-P, stump. Number four, acted. A-C-T-E-D. And the last word is tweak. T-W-E-A-K. So a little bit of a solving aid. For example, the first two words are night and 40. With these two guesses, you probably can figure out that this person probably had T right, but in the wrong position, yeah, in night, because they repeated T in the second guess in 40, but with T's in a different position now. It's in the fourth position. So is the kind of the logic that you might need to backwards solve this.
Yeah. They're really hunting for that T's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're shopping around. Yeah. They're like, is it here? Is it here? Is it here? Yeah. If you figured out the word, you can head over to our website, goodjobbrain.com, and you'll see a Wordle puzzle section, and you can put your answer there. Good luck. And that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. As you can tell, my voice is starting to go away. That means we had a good time.
Yeah, well spent.
We had a good time. Hope you guys learned a lot of stuff about Mars dirt and moon dirt, cleaning products to fix your dirty problems, and dirty movies, dirty titled movies. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on all podcast apps, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. This podcast is part of Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to other shows like Food with Mark Bittman, Infamous America, Subtext, and Food with Mark Bittman. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
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 Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.